welcome to Elephate in the Room, Elephate's weekly podcast. This week we have something a little bit different for you. Entering the room are two people. We have Alexis Sanders, who does SEO and SEO experiments at Merkle, as well as my colleague, Tomek Rudzki, who is the R&D specialist and technical SEO here for Elephate. It was suggested that these two, who are known for their experimental nature with SEO, might be able to have a pretty interesting conversation. So we decided to make that happen. So this is a little bit different. We do have some icebreakers. We find out which fictional world Alexis would choose to live in. And we also find out about Tomek's favorite sandwich. Everything else, though, is basically a conversation between those two. So if you are especially interested in SEO experiments and whatnot, please make sure you have something to drink, someplace comfortable to be. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Elephate in the Room with Alexis and Tomek. Alexis Sanders, why don't you tell our audience who you are and what you do?
Hello, everyone. I work for Merkle as an account manager. I also work as part of Merkle's tech team, which is a group of people that help all the other account managers deal with complex technical issues that happen on client sites.
Thank you very much. And in a little bit of a twist today, we have a second guest on the show, my coworker and all-around R&D specialist, Tomek Rudzki. Why don't you say hello to the people?
Hello. Derek, it's nice you pronounced my name correctly. Very good. As Derek said, I'm a research and development specialist at Elephate. In short, I do everything what a technical SEO should do, except I usually don't work directly with the clients.
Thank you very much. And I did win a contest reading the last name, so I'm pretty proud of that. So welcome both of you to the show. We are going to start with the icebreakers. So I have a set of questions for you, Alexis, and I have a second set of questions for Tomek. We're going to go one at a time back and forth, but you don't both have to answer the same questions. We're going to mix it up a little bit here.
Okay.
So Alexis, question number one for you. What professional sport would be made better with an alcohol requirement?
Would they have to drink it? Or do other people around them have to drink it?
So the athletes have to drink the alcohol.
Oh, yes, definitely. What is that sport where it's like the ice one where people have to go like rub the ice and basically like get that?
Curling, I think that is.
Curling would definitely be better with alcohol. Athletes required to drink alcohol. I think they do, don't they?
Yeah, I just assume they're already drunk on beer.
Do they not?
I'm not sure, but curling is a good one. Yeah, if anytime you can combine ice and alcohol, and it's not me specifically doing it, I think it's a fantastic idea.
Yes. Yeah, I think they're pretty gifted too on the ice, you know. They don't have to wear skates or anything either.
No, I don't think so. I've never actually watched a curling match. Is that what they call it? Curling match?
It'd probably actually be much tougher with alcohol, though, because if you think about it, it requires a lot of precision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what would make it fun for us.
Yeah, definitely.
Tomek, you have to wear a t-shirt with the same word on it every day for a year. Which word do you choose?
That's a difficult question. SEO forever?
SEO forever.
I should have seen that one coming. Okay, SEO forever technically is two words, but that's fine. I'll let this slide.
You can make it into one, so.
Fair enough. Alexis, which fictional world would you choose to live in?
My gut said Harry Potter. I'm going to stick with it.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Okay. Tomek, what would be the absolute worst brand name for chocolate?
The worst brand name for chocolate? Mm-hmm. Next question, please.
I'll let you think about that one. If later on you come up with an answer, we'll edit that in.
Okay.
Alexis, if you had to use a fake name, what name would you make up?
Probably Kira. Sounds pretty cool. Just Kira. No last Kira. Name, just Kira. Yeah. Keep it simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you sound like a pop star now.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Thanks. Not my aspirational goals, but you know, I'll take it. I take the money.
Yeah. That would be nice. I would take that as well. I don't know if I could do the dance moves as well, but
yeah,
I'd give it a shot. Tomek, what's your favorite sandwich
Okay, my favorite sandwich. Alexis and you guys probably don't know, but every day a guy comes to our office and we can buy a sandwich. And I prefer the most popular one, the one with sausage and cheese.
The sausage and cheese sandwich.
Nice.
By the way, Derek, you asked me about the worst name for chocolates. I didn't come with any idea, but I just Googled it. And there is a list. There is a definite ranking of chocolate bars from worst to best on BuzzFeed.
Okay.
And it seems that the worst is Double Decker. Maybe you know it.
Double Decker.
Then Topic. Like, what's the topic? Come on. And Drifter. Like, you drift your car. So it's very funny. But I couldn't imagine worse than that. Let's pick Topic. That's the topic.
Topic. Googling your icebreaker questions is cheating, Tomek. Let's just.
But you didn't tell us the rules, so it's. I'm fine with that.
Now, Alexis, our final question for you: what is your guilty pleasure band?
My guilty pleasure band? Oh gosh, probably Linkin Park. Is that does that count?
Linkin Park.
I think it still does.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still love Hybrid Theory. Still think it's one of the best albums of all time. So if you want to talk about it. But I feel like they're a little bit of an older band. Like that was more of when I was in middle school, which was a long time ago.
So you're going to stick with Linkin
Park? Yeah, I'm going to stick with Linkin Park.
All right.
They do good work.
Do you still listen to them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Tomek listens to them too. Everyone does. It's everyone's guilty pleasure.
Our final question for Tomek. If aliens landed on Earth tomorrow and offered to take you home with them, would you go?
If it would be a very beautiful alien, why not?
All right, so that's your answer. That's thank nice. You guys both very much. Now, our final question generally is, now, if you weren't doing what you're doing, what would you be doing? So what's like your alternate path, Alexis?
In life? Be a wizard. Yeah, like go in Harry Potter and be a wizard. do you mean like in the real world?
Yes.
I would spend, like, if I had a ton of money, just like endless sums of money, I mean, besides being a philanthropist, which would be so amazing, which actually, I guess I should just go with philanthropist, but I'd probably spend all day at like universities learning and just be a professional learner.
Okay. Yeah. Forever student.
Forever student. Yeah. I think that'd be a good life, you know, help people and just learn things.
That sounds pretty cool. Tomek, what about you? What would you be doing if you weren't doing SEO?
The SEO is the purpose of life. So, okay. You know, I think I would be a programmer or a data scientist, one of those two.
Still in the same general area, but you would do a little bit different. Okay, well, thanks. Now, Alexis, you said that Tomek is your longest Twitter friend.
Yeah.
How did you and Tomek start communicating? So what was it that brought you guys together on Twitter?
It was just a long series of events. No, I'm just kidding. So basically, I had created technicalseo.expert, which is essentially a challenge that was based off of Dean Crudis's OAP Ninja. And I know you did that too, Tomek.
Yes,
right?
That's right.
You're basically like an online SEO scavenger hunt extraordinaire, pretty much.
Right?
Right, yeah. So he had found me through that challenge. And I think outside of Merkel, and previously it was an internal Merkel challenge that I had done. And you were like probably the fourth one to finish level 2 in the public. And then when I launched level 3, Tomek was actually the second one to finish, and it was like the difference of an hour.
But I ended the second level as the first person.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You were actually the inspiration for level 3. I think I say that on one of the end pages.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you were the one that kept asking me for it.
Solving your technical SEO challenge was a pleasure for me.
Oh, thank you.
Especially when I ended up like the first person who finished the second level. Unfortunately, with the third level, I was not the first.
Yeah.
But never mind.
Yeah.
I learned a lot.
Yeah, and I actually made it because I thought you were so smart. I was like, I gotta make this so hard that Tomek cannot do it in a day.
Oh.
And I was really happy when it took longer than a day. But I think it was my fault that it took longer than the day because some of the challenges are just hard just because they're picky and not so much because they're challenging. I was happy that it didn't just take a day.
Okay, anyways, it was a great challenge and I strongly encourage all of the SEOs to try it on their own. It will be a great pleasure for you.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of, I don't know how you feel about it, but creating it, I felt like it was a lot of just required a ton of tenacity. If you really just kept trying different things, eventually you would probably get somewhere close to the answer. But it requires you to try different things.
At the beginning, I thought that there are some mistakes in Alex's challenge. So I was writing to her, are you sure that that's correct? Are you sure that's correct? And two times, it turned out that there were some errors, but Alexis was able to fix them. So I was able to come to the next level, and etc.
Yeah, there was actually some cool switches in there that happened between, like, I had part of it on my testing domain. Mm-hmm. And then when people transitioned, the people who transitioned to the testing domain were able to go, like, I guess a little bit faster. But I pushed everything. Everything should be good.
I will assume that everything is the way it should be on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's been out for like a year now. So
great.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why we decided to do this two-person podcast a little bit different, the CEO of Elefate was interested in having you two talk because you're both fairly well known for your research and development in regards to SEO. So different types of experiments and testing and the different things that go into that. So Alexis, we'll start with you. What do you think? What is the importance of research and development in regards to SEO?
Yeah, I think if you have a site that's generating money at all, then it's really important to make sure that you have anecdotal evidence of what works for your site. And that makes sense because similar to like working out, for instance, some things work better for some people, some things work better for other people. So when you test, you figure out what really works for you, and then you can gain learnings from it. You can literally use the scientific process to figure out what works best for you and use that to make better decisions in the long term. And then I also think it's important, at least from an SEO perspective, to go back and understand how Google is perceiving certain things. Because I think one of the things that as SEOs we do is we sometimes take all the information, there's so much information overload from coming from everyone, coming from experts, coming from Google, coming from the actual data that you're seeing. And I think sometimes going back and trying to organize all your variables out and figure out what is causing what for you is going to be what ultimately allows you to make the best decisions and future strategic SEO recommendations.
Those are all definitely good things. Tomek, what do you think? What are some of the important things for research and development?
Okay, I strongly agree with Alexis. To add something, Google changes very, very rapidly, like 600 changes per year or something like that. Of course, there are some small updates, there are bigger ones, but it's more and more common that something that was working fine just a few years ago doesn't work for you anymore. So you have to test if a particular SEO solution works or doesn't work anymore. Plus, you have to adjust your SEO strategy to a particular client. There is no one to fit all rule. There is no silver bullet. And for me, it's very important to keep up with the news, to follow Twitter, follow the most recent trends, to read available articles, try to filter it and decide if it's bullshit or not, and try to share it with my team. I think that's very important. There are a couple of well-known research and development specialists in our industry. Of course, there is Alexis, there is also Bill Swawski, Paul Shapiro, Tom Autoni, and the others. So I highly appreciate their work, and I want to be like them, to know.
I feel the same way, Tomek. I want to be like you one day.
So what's something interesting that you have come across recently when doing research and development? Alexis, we'll start with you. Is there something that you can think of for our listeners?
Yeah, I think on the recency scale, SEO, it's so hard to define recency because like Tomek said, it's like within the last week, everything changes. And in the last week, I haven't done any SEO experiments. But looking back at some of the experiments that I did last year, I, for the first half of the year, published an experiment every week. And the whole idea was basically to do really tiny micro experiments that are answering like a really small question. And some of my favorite ones from there, I'm like skimming through right now. I think the ones that looked at what Google tools are using the HTML versus the document object model, I think that's really important. And that comes up a lot on the technical team because people will say that they're seeing certain things, but Google is seeing other things. So always making sure to check what Googlebot is seeing in the document object model. And I think some of the tools that Google has introduced return the HTML, and that ends up causing some issues with when you actually are looking at the search results because it's not what Merkle is producing. So I thought that was pretty useful and interesting. I also really like the one on Getzli compression, because that compressing images and trying to see like what was actually happening versus what visually the quality was. I know a lot of people talked about the idea that they really want to have a number that's associated with the quality, but I think to some extent, as long as you can see a good quality image with your eyes and it's as small as possible, that usually works for, at least works for me. I really like the resource hinting one. I know that one wasn't really popular, but I thought that one was pretty cool. Basically looking at different results on how efficiently different resource hints were performing. I was a little bit surprised by some of the results there. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then I also really like, you know, what's another data source that's really, I think, probably underappreciated? It's published often by Aaron Bradley, who is a structured data expert. He retweets it often. And basically, it's just a collection of the web and all the structured data that's being used. I believe it's called Web Commons. Yeah, I think that's probably the most exciting ones. What about you guys?
Okay, can I brag?
Yeah, please.
Okay, Alexis and you know it well, but with LF8, especially with Bartosz and Maria, we are working on some JavaScript SEO experiments. Then I wrote an article about that, The Ultimate Guide to JavaScript SEO.
Love that article.
In that research, I was really curious if Google treats escape fragments. Okay, there was a topic about escape fragments, and in that time it was deprecated, and some people tried to serve Googlebot rendered version on the same URL as users. And in that time it was not clear if Google treats it as a cloaking or not. Mm-hmm. Then I think, okay, I'm not sure. I asked John Mayer this question. He replied, yes, it's not, you can use it, it's not cloaking. Then I wrote this in my article, asked all the people in my company if they interpret John Mayer's reply the same as me, of course. And 2 months later, there was a Google I/O conference. Then they called it dynamic rendering, so everything was confirmed. Then Google was saying that they can render JavaScript just fine. And I think it was after our research, after our publications, Bartosz, Maria, and mine at LF8. Mm-hmm. And we were claiming that, come on, guys, Google is not indexing JavaScript just fine. There are a lot of issues here that we have to address. Then Google I/O conference, and they recommend dynamic rendering, so serving Googlebot pre-rendered version for all the modern, rapidly changing websites. So it was a huge change. I believe we had some, okay, how to say it in English? We put the brick to the wall.
Or you put it where it belongs, is that it?
Yeah, and I think we were a part of this. Of course, there were other publications showing that, come on, they are not perfect at indexing JavaScript.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's such a great option, and I'm glad that Google confirmed that they're okay with it. And Bing has also confirmed that as well. I know Frederic Dubu has talked about it at a few conferences, that so long as a good faith effort is made to match the copy that's being served to bots to the actual experience, that it's okay. Even though technically when you read the guidelines for cloaking, it kind of sounds like it's not okay. So it was a little bit confusing for people. So thanks for your research there and support of that cause.
You're welcome.
Didn't Bartosz, he had a great article too on Hulu, right?
Yeah. You know, Hulu is one of the greatest competitors of Netflix.
Yep.
And such a huge drop. When it comes to the most recent research, one of my colleagues noticed that the crawl statistics in Google Search Console are calculated in some weird way. I mean, they doesn't count if Google discovered an URL in a sitemap, and we are discovering it a little bit deeper. And I don't want to say anything, just...
Okay, I was going to ask you to clarify things. We'll wait in anticipation for the articles.
Just wait, and we have to check it, because, you know, I don't want to share the stuff that we're not confirmed.
That's like a really good point to like make sure to document everything when you're testing. Like if anyone is interested in testing out there, like document everything and screenshot everything, because like you said before, it may change the next day and then you'll never see it again. And it was like a really important blip in the story, but it's a really important point, especially if a lot of people are seeing it across multiple experiences.
Yeah, and when we talk about watching the news, to stay in, on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's very important to be up to date. And let's talk about an example of Google fixing mistakes with your rank tags. Mm-hmm. As you all this SEO knows that Google can fix some basic errors for you, but since it's not documented, in the future they can just stop fixing that, and you will not notice it unless you are not active on Twitter. You'll see on Twitter some news that Google stopped fixing this error, fixing your mistakes. Then you have to think if you have some websites that do such mistakes, then you can ask developers to fix these mistakes.
Definitely.
What I want to say that now Google can fix some of your errors, but since it's not documented, they can just skip it in the future and you will not notice. So that's very important for me.
It's true. It's so true. And my favorite example of mistaked hreflang tags is if you do dash LA, so you have like, I don't know, ES for Spanish, let's say Laos. LA. And LA is Laos, right?
Yeah, Laos.
It's not actually, you think, oh, Latin America, or even I think Great Britain too. It's not .UK, it's GB or something like that. It's like,
oh. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's really, I feel like it's really important to make sure you stick by the protocols when it comes to certain technical SEO things, like making sure you're reading what the ISO standards are, you know, because you don't want to end up in the situation like you described. So I actually have a question. My boss, I'm going to use you guys for some resources. My boss recently asked me, how can we make sure and help our team to understand things that are in the news and that are available? And one thing I always recommend is having like a Feedly account set up, putting it on your mobile phone. SparkToro by Rand Fishkin's obviously an awesome tool to keep up. Do you guys have any other tips?
I do the same.
Really?
Alex,
yeah.
Please.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's why we're
plus,
friends.
Plus, if I'm not sure something, I try to ask some people in our field.
Yeah. You'd be, it's so surprising how people are willing to share things across the world. Like, I think it's a biological thing that we want to share things that we're passionate about.
Yeah, and if I don't know the answer and nobody else knows, I try to do some testing to see if that could work or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, testing takes a lot of time, so I try to avoid it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can't just avoid it and you have to do it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on building testing into the development funnel?
I'm so glad you brought this up because I'm just really excited about it. I know that Mike King recently had an excellent talk on how to get things into the software development funnel. I know that Jonah Alderson's speech at MozCon was all about this idea that to some extent, SEOs are weighted down by all these like little tiny minute details that we're like trying to chase everything around, and it's important to get ahead of things. And then also, I know I keep listing out talks. I was listing out some notes beforehand. You guys have heard of Andrew Ng, right?
Can you repeat, please?
Andrew Ng. So he is the machine learning guy. He essentially was a professor at Stanford for a while. Then he was Bing's head of machine learning. He worked at Google for a little bit, just a really all-around smart guy. And I had happened across a few of his talks before, and one of them was about how it was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. But the idea that if there's any decision that takes less than a second for a person to do, pretty much engineers can set it up so a machine can do it. And I think the idea of automating tasks that are less fun and making sure that we build in processes into the funnel so we don't have to deal with images that take 7 seconds to load or situations where every single canonical ends up wrong or there's no index on the site, you know, those type of things. I think there's a way to get it into the process and get it into code so it doesn't have to be bothersome, or even just having it so people are prevented from uploading images that are larger than a required size, or that they make sure that they compress things. And I'm only talking about images because I know that I've been thinking a lot about speed lately, and images are a big part of that.
Tomek, what are your thoughts on that?
I strongly believe that SEOs should cooperate with developers in many fields. Now the intersection is huge. When we want to do JavaScript SEO, you have to cooperate with developers. If you notice that a website is really, really slow, you have to tell them what they can improve on their website. Sometimes it's about the basics, like they use some uncompressed images. Yeah. Sometimes it's deeper.
You're from with analytics. You've pulling too many things onto the page.
Yeah, sometimes we go even deeper.
Font addicts? I'm just kidding.
No, there are some real user monitoring tools that can show you even which queries mm-hmm. to database consume the most of the mm-hmm. time. Here we can just get access and see what is going wrong with the site. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the speed of websites, there are a lot of articles about that, and users simply will not wait more than 3 seconds. They just close your page, close your website, and go to your competitors. Now it's even more important than ever because, you know, we all use phones when the connection is limited.
Definitely. There's a study, I think it was done by Ericsson. I feel like I should look this up, but Ericsson, and basically the whole premise was they looked at how much cognitive load different tasks cause people. And they looked at mobile load as one of those tasks, and it's right next to solving a math problem, which is the highest cognitive load, and higher than watching a horror movie. Basically, their premise was that mobile delays really stress us out. And like, I try to look at other people's behavior when they use devices. And whenever something takes long to load, especially if someone's under than probably 35, they get so frustrated with it. It really is quite a phenomenon to think that, wow, like our expectation, like you said, we have to load this in less than 3 seconds to get at the best experience. But then at the same time, they want this amazing interactive journey where that takes a lot of dynamic JavaScript to make, you know, the challenges.
Totally agree.
Like, how are we supposed to create a dynamic experience in under 3 seconds? Like, come on. But people do it. So, and I think some of the things web browsers are putting a lot of pressure on themselves to start trying to alleviate some of those issues as well. I think even like, I'm not sure if it was IO or Chrome Dev Summit, they basically announced that they're going to start doing HTML tags for lazy loading images. I don't think that's launched yet, but things like that that streamline and make things that may be challenging to update for developers way easier. So everyone's feeling that pressure.
That would be really interesting. Now, if you can use JavaScript like intersection observer, etc., yeah. But HTML tags, it would be nice.
Oh gosh, so easy. So I think a lot of people are feeling the same pressures, and because of that, we're all going on this journey together, which is nice.
Yeah. You
know, when we're all working together towards a solution, it usually happens much faster.
And Alexis, what are you excited about in technical SEO?
Well, I just published an article on Search and Internet. It's called 2019, Finding Your Seamlessness. And a lot of what it looks at is what pressures are on Google, and then in turn, what pressures are on companies, and then essentially what we as SEOs, as part of those companies, as part of a larger ecosystem, deal with. And I think one of the things that's been interesting me a lot is Q&A systems. Sounds a little odd, but basically, if you think about it, IBM is a question answering system, and it's essentially a natural evolution to information retrieval. So when we think about information retrieval, that's essentially like you have a lot of documents, and then you just return a bunch of documents, right? But then with Q&A systems, the whole idea is how do we return an answer? And we started to see that shift with Google for probably like the last at least 5 years with question answer boxes, one answers, and all the different features that they've been adding. But I think the pressure keeps getting higher on Google as people are expecting more and more from that first result. And because of that pressure that's put on Google, we in turn as SEOs have more pressure on us to get to that number one position so that we even have a chance of being looked at by people. I think that is very interesting to me. I'm not really sure what the answer is yet.
Well, that's what we have to look forward to. Tomek, what about you? Things that you're excited about in technical SEO?
The more I'm into SEO, the more I know I don't know anything. You know, the more...
True.
And but I feel I'm quite comfortable with JavaScript SEO and with international SEO, and I feel comfortable with researching. What enjoys me the most is discovering new things, that there is a lot of things you have to discover, and there are a lot of changes in Google algorithms that you have to catch up or try to predict what's next.
Do you think there's like static elements that people can have and do consistently to perform well in search, even if, let's say, for instance, they can't predict the future?
I think the basics, like you have to, in such a case, you have to implement canonicals. If you have international website, it's good to implement hreflangs. Yeah. But beyond the basics, I don't think there is a static set of things you can do the same way. I mean, every website is different, and the winter is coming. Google changes very rapidly, so I don't think you can be stale.
I think that idea of like following the web protocols, at least for technical SEO, is so important because engineers are designing based on those web protocols. They're like, oh yeah, people will follow this, you know. And then in the real world, it ends up being a little bit more dynamic. And they adjust for that, but if you do it right the first time, then you're doing it with the same specifications that they're designing for.
And one of the questions that I have, an industry that seems to constantly be changing, do you feel like it's always changing for the better for users, even though it makes life apparently a little bit annoying for people who do SEO? Does this help the end user?
I think it depends. Some changes are for good, sometimes not. I can see on Twitter and many newspapers that people are not fine with what Google returns. Like, you know, the famous case with Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends on the user that you ask, right? Just the user. Yeah. Donald Trump, he is not satisfied. Everyone else is fine, though. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I can see that Google search engine is much wiser than it was 2 or 5 years ago. I think the changes are for good.
Yeah, I agree. I think ultimately Google is trying to race towards improving user experience and matching that against what their evaluators are writing in the quality guidelines. And because of that, they're also making updates to make their crawler stronger and their algorithm stronger, so they can be able to sense small shifts in language and in foreign languages as well, which is fascinating to think about, that our whole systems were actually, that'd be kind of interesting to hear from you guys. Is the Polish language Google as strong as the English language Google?
Yeah, and can see that English Google, there is strong competition, but it's much better at organizing spam, etc. In Polish market, in Google search results, you can see still a lot of spam.
Interesting.
And when we talk about changes in Google, if it's going to good or for bad, I highly appreciate Google for sharing their knowledge about performance. I can name Ilya Grigorik, Adi Osmani, and a lot of others that share their knowledge about performance, like critical rendering path, optimizing images, and a lot of other more technical stuff.
Image.guide, images.guide by Adi Osmani is amazing. And then, of course, Ilya Grigorik coming in with his Udacity course and all the documentation he writes. And, of course, high-performance browser networking, also a great read, and online for free. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I read parts of this book.
Yeah, I think chapters 9 through 13, like if anybody's going to read it, like those are the heavy hitters. So it sounds weird. It sounds very specific, but those are my favorite. I mean, all of them are great. All of them are great.
Okay, Alexis.
I expect a book report from you by Monday, Tomek. We're going to go ahead and start wrapping up here. One of the last things I would like to get to is what would you say to any SEOs who want to test things but don't know how?
So if you're just going at it, like you don't necessarily have a site, start small. Start with a really small question to answer. Look at other research that's been done out there on similar questions and essentially try to follow the scientific process as much as possible. And I know we mentioned this earlier, but make sure to document everything you can, all the changes, the dates, the times. I like to pull dates into screenshots just so I have them and save them in a folder, because it'll definitely help you when you're going back in 3 weeks and you can look at the full storyline and the progression of what you saw. And you don't have to be like, oh, did I see that? Did that exist? Or did I just imagine it? Or convince other people of what you saw because you have screenshots that are timestamped and dated.
And Tomek, what about you?
First of all, before testing, you can check if anybody else knows the answer. Maybe the topic was discussed on any SEO forum or Twitter. If so, you are done and you don't need to test. If you want to test, okay, it may be a little bit silly. Just make sure that you know the basics of SEO, that you don't test a dumb theory. Make sure that the thing you want to test is really important for your business, for your website. And if you want to set up a test, I think it's good to start small, like Alexis said. And let's say you can install WordPress, then you can install some tools that can help you add, let's say, canonical tags or noindex, xrobot tags, etc. And then, of course, you can test anything you want. I think WordPress is a good choice because it's widely used. There is a lot of plugins for that. And if you encounter any issue, you can easily find the answer. But of course, it really depends on the test because some tests, WordPress is not the best fit in such cases. But for small experiments, it can be fine. I would recommend Tarin Nginx, Apache, etc. But there are a lot of SEOs who are not comfortable with that. So I try to encourage you to start simply, like installing WordPress.
Definitely.
Okay.
And I think too, if you own a site as well, make sure that you're marking down dates that things are launched so that when you go back and look at your analytics profile, you can mark everything and see how your performance shifted over time based on the different tasks that you've been doing.
Yeah, exactly. So please note what changes you take. Then you can see if these changes was good or bad.
I know. It's like, I never test experiments that are not recommended by the general public on a site that's generating money first.
Yes.
I would say make sure if you're doing things that are not recommended, always start with a smaller side experiment because you want to make sure that nothing happens to your profits, which is a good thing to ensure.
Exactly.
So like sometimes some of the experiments may be a little bit more gutsy or trying different things or really trying to get at whether or not Google can actually see content. Testing whether or not Google can actually see content is probably not best to try on your actual site that's generating you a few million dollars a year.
Thank you so much, both of you, for the advice there and for the conversation today. Obviously, it took a little bit of a different turn. I'd rather the two of you talk it out for a little bit. So Alexis, thank you so much for joining us. Tomek, thank you so much for sitting across the office from me and joining in. This has been Derek. You've been listening to Elephate in the Room. Thank you and talk to you next time.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumais, music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at ElephateSEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.